Hello and welcome to Feminist Frequency's Star Trek podcast. Today we're diving into Star Trek Discovery Season 3, Episodes 6 and 7. I'm your host, Anita Sarkeesian. Before we get started, just really quick, today, the day that this podcast comes out, which may not be the day you're listening to it, how dare you not listen to it when it comes out, whatever. Anyways, today is Giving Tuesday, which kicks off Feminist Frequency's end of the year campaign. It's a really important fundraising end of year moment for us to help us do all the important work we're doing. It's been a really tough year for everyone, and we were really proud to have been able to open our games and online harassment hotline to support the mental health and emotional well-being of folks who make and play games, and also to keep making both the Star Trek podcast and the Feminist Frequency radio podcast, which brings feminist media criticism to the airwaves. So if you want to help us keep doing all of that, please head over to feministfrequency.com/donate and contribute to our end of year campaign. Thanks. All right, enough of that shit. So I'm really excited because we have some amazing guests for you today. First is Charlie Jane Anders, who is the author of Victories Greater Than Death, the first book in a new young adult trilogy coming in 2021. I'm sorry, I didn't know about this. I was so distracted reading this bio. I was just saying, I'm going to finish reading your bio, but I was just saying that, Charlie Jane, you write some of my absolute favorite fiction books. And like, I'm like, wait, there's something new? Come on.
Yeah.
So I apologize for butchering that intro, but Victories Greater Than Death. I'm so excited about it. And also, there's a forthcoming short story collection, Even Greater Mistakes. Her other books include The City in the Middle of the Night and All the Birds in the Sky. Oh, so good. Her fiction and journalism have appeared in The New York Times, The Washington Post, Slate, McSweeney, Mother Jones, The Boston Review, Tor.com, Tin House, Conjunctions, Wired Magazine, and so many other places. Her TED Talk, Go Ahead, Dream About the Future, got 700,000 views in its first week. With Annalee Newitz, she co-hosts the podcast Our Opinions Are Correct, which also I love. I think I just love everything you do.
Aw, thank you. Oh, it's my wonderful. God. Well, it's mutual. It's very mutual. And it's such an honor to be here. It's such, you know.
Yeah, we're so excited to have you. All right, Trace, not to leave you out, because you are one of my favorite science researchy, thinky, video people-y. I don't want to call you a YouTuber because you are so much more than that. But Trace Dominguez is a curiosity explorer, science communicator, Emmy-nominated on-camera host, producer, and podcaster. He's written, hosted, and produced thousands of videos working with creators and educators from around the world. Trace explores the world of backyard astronomy with Stargazers, a weekly nationwide PBS television show, and produces his own YouTube series to educate and inspire called Uno, Dos of Trace. Every day, Trace strives to learn something new and encourages others to join him. How delightful.
Thanks.
What is it like to make like cool videos about cool things where people are just like excited to talk about cool things and not have everyone hate you all the time? What's that like, Trace?
Well, people still give you hate sometimes, but I'm usually sure. In the ways of like, oh, you got that physics thing wrong. It's actually this other type of physics thing. And it's like, oh, well, I'm not a physics person necessarily. Sure. So,
but which is what makes your work really great too, is that like you are so like you're learning with us, right?
Yeah.
That you're like, yeah.
I mean, that's my goal is to, I think it's really fun. And just, you know, fun astronomy thing happening right now. If you go outside tonight, look at the moon and along the same line, like if you were to draw a line, you'll see both Jupiter and Saturn are big bright dots. And they're just going to keep getting closer together over the next few weeks until they'll look like one dot in the sky, which is pretty cool.
I've heard about this. That's so exciting.
I'm assuming you mean tonight, as in Friday, November 27th, when we're recording this, but that it's still relevant for next week when our listeners will hear this.
It will still be relevant over the next, I think the actual grand conjunction happens sometime in early December, but I'm not sure the exact date. We recorded, I wrote an episode of Stargazers about it, but TV is weird, so I had to like film it like 3 months ago, so I don't exactly remember when it airs, but it's coming up pretty soon.
Neat. Well, I love that. All right, well, speaking of space and planets, Star Trek.
Sorry. Anyway.
Yeah. No, it was great. So, as you know, how we do, we're a little makeshift over here at Star Trek Feminist Frequency Land. So, I'm going to have our guests read us our CBS ripped off descriptions of the episodes we're talking about today. So, Charlie Jane, will you tell us what the little description of episode 6?
Episode 6, Scavengers. After receiving a message from Book, Burnham and Giorgio embark on a rogue mission to find him, leaving Saru to pick up the pieces with Admiral Vance. Meanwhile, Stamets forms an unexpected bond with Adira.
Dun, dun, dun.
Nice. Good read.
Thank you. Yeah. You know,
like I mean, have to step up my reading.
Anytime I get to say the words rogue mission, I just get really excited.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Trace, give us episode 7's recap.
Episode 7, Unification 3. While grappling with the fallout of her recent actions and what her future might hold, Burnham agrees to represent the Federation in an intense debate about the release of politically sensitive, but highly valuable, burn data.
Burn data. Burn data. Come on.
Data is, that's a lot. That's a lot.
There's no data like burn data.
Terrible, like, 90s, like, garage band name where you're just like, why would you choose that?
Or like a cyberpunk novel, like Burn Data by William Gibson.
Yes.
It wouldn't be William Gibson. It would be like, it would be like Bruce Sterling. Burn Data by Bruce Sterling.
That's funny.
That was definitely a better example. I love it. Okay. Oh, you know what? I didn't ask y'all. You know, yesterday I ate a lot of pie. Can't be expected to think straight today. It's fine. I made my first pie crust though from scratch, which I was very excited about. Yep.
Yum. Yeah, fun. Did it turn out?
It did. Yeah, actually. It was a little burnt, but whatever. It was still really good. Most of it was fine. Whatever. We don't need to talk about pie on Star Trek. Although cake is eternal. So, I guess it is relevant.
Yeah.
Right before we get into these episodes, like briefly, how are you all feeling about season 3 so far? Like, what are your just overview, like positive, bad, good?
I'm loving it personally. I think that, you know, this is the Star Trek show that I was really craving, one that goes further into the future, one that kind of takes big swings and kind of tries a bunch of like really weird, interesting stuff and has like a bunch of like interesting just world building and stuff. I feel like going into the future further has really given Discovery a new lease on life because they can just throw out all the toys and just play with a completely different new toy box. So I'm mostly digging it. I feel like it's got some bumpy patches, but I'm into it.
Yeah, totally.
I would agree with that too. Yeah, I think I like them in the future so much more than I liked them in the past. As much as I miss, you know, Captain Pike. His character was so good, and like that kind of sarcastic cowboy, you know, in space that we got in season 2 was really fun. But now we're into more of like a dark future storyline. So each season is its own thing, and it's funny that, like, you can kind of think of like the first season is really kind of safe, but the second and third seasons they're like playing with where these characters can go, and I think in a really fun way. I love that they're in the future. Exactly like what Charlie said. You can throw away like so much of the story that we've had so far and really like run in whatever direction you want, which is cool.
Yeah, I feel like I don't know what to expect from this show right now, and that's something that I really like.
Same.
I think season 3 is by far in a way superior from the nightmare shitstorm of 1 and the like me really trying to like not hate the show in season 2. You know, like I think that it's finally like getting to know the characters better and getting to know what are like more interesting stories to allow some depth of these characters. And I think Charlie Jane, I totally agree with you too in that like there are some rough patches, and I think episode 6 is a rough patch. Like it did not, I was really bored. Like it was not a good episode in terms of like, really? Did you like it?
I did. I mean, I'm a sucker for like a rescue mission. I like Giorgio getting to be like a total, you know, kind of swaggering badass and just like bowling over these doofuses. I don't know. And I love Book, and anytime Book is in the show, I get excited.
I literally wrote, "Thank God Book is back," in my notes. My boyfriend, as our listeners know, I'm married to Captain Pike and I'm dating Book, right? Like that's we have a very poly open Star Trek world here. And Michael's also dating Book, you know, it's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I feel like I don't dislike the story. Like, I don't dislike what they're trying to do in this. Like, it's very much up my alley of like freeing slaves is up my alley. But I felt like it was really badly done. Like the dialogue between Philippa and Michael when they're like, they're on Book's ship going on this rogue mission. I just felt like those two actors were working their, like, just acting their hearts out, trying to make that terrible dialogue like feel resonant and connected. And just like the pacing of this episode, I just really had a rough time with it.
Yeah, I agree. I think this episode reminds me of like that the Kelvin timeline, like the just new Trek action, like fighting. A dirty universe filled with strife, you know? It's just like, oh my God, economic despair. How's that for the Federation universe? It's just like a whole, it felt Star Wars-y. I mean, not to compare, but it's like, totally. It just felt like, it felt like a Star Wars story where you just expect a speeder to come out of somewhere and like fly through the space, you know, or through the desert factory salvage yard. You know, I liked it, but I didn't love it.
I even felt like the jokes weren't working. I don't feel like this episode worked, even though it should have. Like, you know, when Tilly is talking to Grudge, the cat, and is just like, did you eat her? I don't like you. And like the cat is climbing all over her. And it should have been adorable and delightful and wonderful. And it didn't work for me. And I feel like they were just like, cat, everyone's going to be happy now. But I'm like, well, that's not really like it's got to like fit in. And then the crew member who's having difficulty with their personal teletransporter, like that joke just, it was the joke that kept not working. Like it was kind of funny at first. And then it just, I was like, oh, this is not landing. And it's not that like anyone was performing badly. It's just, I felt like structurally this whole episode just was awkward.
When at the end, when he like, when Book like stops the turbo lift and is like, we're gonna kiss now, you know, and everybody knew what was coming. Also, stopping the turbo lift, total boss move in any Star Trek universe. It's just like when you say halt, some shit's about to go down.
Yeah. Like,
but then he popped in and I was like, of course he did. Now we're in a camp movie. Like, whatever.
And this season has been more campy and has been more comedic in a lot of ways. And I've actually been enjoying it. Like, I feel like they started to like kind of get it. And this one just didn't. It doesn't work for me.
I'm enjoying the kind of more humorous tone in general, and I'm enjoying that they're kind of letting themselves have a little bit more fun in general. Like, everybody just seems a little bit looser, which is good. It does feel like, in general, this season is having a little bit of trouble hitting some of the emotional beats, and partly just because they are trying to kind of rush through so much story in every episode that they don't quite have the time to, like, kind of build the personal stuff that the kind of superstructure that they need to make each of those emotional beats work. And particularly, I think with Michael and Tilly and a couple of the other characters, their relationships haven't been on screen enough for us to really get what we're supposed to get when they have these scenes where they process their relationships. It's like, well, we didn't actually really see any of this. We're just being told about it. And it feels a little bit like that. One thing I liked about Scavengers as an episode is that we got to see more of the Emerald Chain, which is the kind of crime syndicate that the Andorians and the Orions are running. And I just think, you know, Andorians and Orions have been these, you know, species on Star Trek that we never really see that much of. I guess we saw a fair bit of them in Star Trek Enterprise, but they're always just kind of bottom feeders, and they're just kind of like low life, you know, blue and green aliens who don't ever really amount to much in any of the other Star Trek series. So this idea that, like, with the Federation kind of weakened, they've become like a power, and they've become like, it's like, oh, you can't go into Emerald Chain territory. Now that I say that out loud, I'm like, Emerald Chain territory sounds like a really like kind of whack gay bar in like the kind of, you know, don't go into Emerald Chain territory. The drinks are terrible. You know, it's like,
What Star Trek were they introduced in? Because they're new to me in this season. Was this they're like a DS9 thing?
No, they're original Star Trek.
Okay, I didn't watch that either.
Yeah, they've been around
forever. I'm a bad fake Star Trek fan. I refuse to watch the first one.
One of the things that was interesting to me in Scavengers as a Star Trek nerd is that there's this whole thing with the Orions, who are the green guys, where in the original Star Trek, the Orions are slave traders, and they trade the females of their own species are like these green women who dance around in bikinis all the time. That's like literally the only thing that they ever do. And that's like that's their whole culture, is like, our women wear bikinis and dance around. And I'm going to tell you a terrible fact about your boyfriend or your husband, I guess, Captain Pike.
Oh, I don't want to know.
Which is that in the original unaired Star Trek pilot, he wants to quit Starfleet and go become a slave trader with the Orions. He has this whole thing of like, maybe I'll just quit being a starship captain and go trade slaves. And everybody's like, oh yeah, that's a thing you could do. Totally. And wow, like, nobody's like, why would you want to be a slave trader? That's kind of weird. So anyway, Enterprise retconned it so that actually the slave women are secretly in charge and they're just pretending to be slave women. And like, there's a whole thing where they're like, well, you think that the green bikini dancing women are actually the slaves of the men, but actually they're secretly controlling everything. And so it was interesting in this episode where they kind of danced around that, and you keep hearing about this woman who's in charge of this, you know, this Orion woman who's in charge of everything, and everybody's scared of her and we never get to see her. But I kept thinking about that Enterprise thing where they were like, well, actually the women pretend to be slaves. But anyway, so I'm really curious to see that play out.
Fascinating. I thought that they were totally created for this season, this show, and they aren't. And that I love people who know more than me. You were talking about how they're not really doing much justice to, like, they haven't built up some of the relationship beats so that we're just supposed to believe that these feelings exist and what have you. I'm feeling a little bit like they've told us that Giorgio is like really into Michael and that, you know, Giorgio stuck around because of Michael, but I don't know if it's because I just don't remember the previous seasons. Like every time there's the like previously on, I'm like, well, I don't remember that happening. I don't know. We met her mother or whatever. But I'm having a tough time with like Giorgio and Michael really like being super, super bonded. And it might. And so I don't know. I'm struggling with it, even though I love the idea of it. And I like that their relationship. And, you know, I think that the most interesting thing happening here is that Giorgio is like, something is happening to her. As like very similarly to what's her name, the pilot, and like refusing to get help, refusing to acknowledge what the problem is, and like, you know, I find that frustrating, but I won't find it as frustrating if like eventually she does come to get help and support, right? Like if she grows a little bit in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing I was going to say is that this episode was like, hello, new technology episode. And I think,
yeah,
you know, like, what do you all think about the things we saw and the like going into the future and the reimagining of technology? Because I think that's something that was so interesting about Star Trek originally, is this imagining of future technology. And in Discovery, like, we're not getting anything new, right? It is a show that is like, doesn't even have the technology of like future Star Treks. And so now we're like flown 900 years into the future, and we get to like, these writers and creators get to come up with like whatever the fuck they want. And I think that's really fun.
I love it. I am a gadget person. I love like new technology stuff. And so we haven't really seen a lot of new stuff since, you know, Voyager went to the whatever 29th century. And like, so we saw some time travel ships and whatever. But it's so cool to be like, oh, no, we're even further than that now. We have personal transporters, which are cool. We've got, like, the replicator is not as, like, in a wall somewhere. It's just, like, a tabletop. You know, it's just the weird kind of hand tech is weird. Like, why do we need that? Why do we need it? If we're so fancy that we can reprogram matter, then why aren't we just using neural interfaces at this point? It's just, like, to show off our SFX, our special effects budget. Like, I don't understand.
I mean, it'd be pretty boring if you didn't see anything.
Right, yeah. But, like, I think it's more for visual interest than anything. But it's, like, I think it's... It feels Star Trek when they're on the bridge, but they have these, like, little details that are really fun.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying all the new technology. I think it's, you know, it's interesting that the spore drive is still, like, something is that even, like, 900 years later, nobody else has come up with the spore drive. It's, like, this incredible technology that solves pretty much every problem that everybody's having in the future. And, like, nobody in the last 900 years has come up with this idea. Like, Stamets is just, like, this one, like, singular genius who came up with this thing that, you know, it's... Yeah.
And also that data, it's not like it's hidden. Is it like locked away trapped data that's not available to the rest of the Federation or even Starfleet?
About the spore drive? I think that there's a hand-wavy thing at the end of season two where they're like, we will erase all knowledge of the Starship Discovery from, you know, history because of like the sphere data that they're trying to protect. Yeah, I mean, I am really loving the programmable matter and the personal transporters. I think it's really fun that part of what was frustrating about the fact that there hasn't been a Star Trek show set further in the future, like since Voyager, basically, we haven't kept going further into the future, is that we don't get to see the Federation advancing or technology advancing. And that is one thing that makes Star Trek different from Star Wars is, you know, Star Wars, technology never improves on Star Wars. Like you go, you go 1,000 years into the future, 1,000 years in the past, they're still using the exact same stuff. Versus on Star Trek, you always see technology improving. Mm-hmm. And it's part of the ethos of the show. And I think that getting to see that again, it just makes it feel more Star Trek-y in a way.
Yeah.
I totally agree.
I loved the tech with the ships. So at the very beginning, you see, honestly, there was a lot of like, you know, like techie explanations of things that I was like, I don't fucking know, whatever. It doesn't matter to me. But the like the effects of the like the pieces coming off of the ship, I thought were really interesting. And then like being like, we don't even need this extra shit and it's going to make it easier for us to maneuver. Or like when Book's ship comes in to save to save the folks on the planet, like it does that like spinny break apart thing and then reform.
Cool.
And I was like, yes,
that was a good actually. Because, you know, Charlie Chain brought this up, like, they are not hitting their emotional moments. That was an emotional moment, I thought, in the show that worked, where the ship did the thing, and then Book was almost, like, proud of the ship doing the thing. And so he gets all, like, excited and shouts and is like, yeah. And I was like, that moment felt great.
Yeah.
It was, like, a big win moment after what was kind of a plotting story.
Another, like, emotional moment that I thought was really valuable, although I think we can get into some more around this, but was when, so Michael goes rogue, right? We've established this, which is not weird or abnormal. And also it's Michael, that's what she does. And she does it even more now. And like Saru going to Tilly and look, I'm loving the Saru Tilly stuff. Like I loved what their relationship in the first episode, or the second one, whatever the cowboy episode was. But you know, having Tilly be like calling it out and being like, she broke your trust and we're trying to build trust with the Federation and like, you gotta call it. And like,
yeah,
you know, I really liked that a lot. And I also thought that there was something really lovely about when Saru like is reprimanding Michael and being like, you're demoted. You know, Michael's obviously upset, but was like, you're doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I loved that.
I thought episode seven's like pacing and emotion was great. It was classic Star Trek. Like if you, my comparison from earlier, like new Trek versus classic Trek, like episode seven, the unification episode is classic Trek. We got a trial. We got Vulcans and humans arguing about debate and politics and shit. We got like, what is human? What does it mean? Oh my God, we're so emotional. Like it's just,
loved this episode.
It
and
was
that's the
ripped
thing that
from
was
the
so
headlines.
Frustrating. I was like, episode six sucked and I didn't even want to watch the next one. And then I did and I was like, oh yes, give
so
me
good,
just inject
yes.
the Star Trek into my
it's
veins,
like,
please.
It's like a Star Trek salve. Just like rub it on me.
It was so good. Yeah, okay, well then let's talk about this. Like there's actually a lot of things happening here. You know, one, I wanna, you know, we get Book and Michael sort of cementing their affections for each other in the last episode with the kiss that we were all like, thank you finally for doing that,
yeah.
which I'm not that person, but whatever. Michael has had a really rough go of relationships and like we need to just forget Tyler. So like here we are.
Yeah.
But like in episode seven, there are, you know, small moments where they're together and they're like, what are you going to do? Like Michael's really struggling with like not feeling a part of the Federation. And there's this moment at the end when Michael, not to like just skip ahead, but whatever, when Michael is like, yeah, I'm going to stay, like, I need to stay here for this, where Book says, you feel like home. And I fucking died, y'all. Like, I was just like, this is so good. Like, they have such good chemistry together and they're so fucking hot.
They have amazing chemistry. Like,
they really do.
I feel more invested in the Michael book relationship than I do in like most of the other relationships on this show, just because they have such incredible chemistry. And, you know, they're both just such great actors, and they just, they work so hard with whatever they're given. Like, they just, you know, and there's a cat, which I think helps a lot. Like, the cat kind of,
I love the cat.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. We talked a bit early episodes of this season about like how the Federation and Starfleet often get, used synonymously, and how that's kind of troubling because Starfleet is military. And you know, whatever, we can talk about that all day and night. But I, one of the things that for me is like, I'm not invested in the Federation's success, and I'm not invested in like the Federation at all. And so a lot of the emotional beats that are taking place around like, gotta find the Federation is home, holy shit, we found them, like, we're gonna be okay kind of thing, like, I just am not there. And so I love that Michael is like, I don't know if this is like for me anymore, like, maybe the things I need to do are somewhere else. And like, I know that this show cannot exist with Michael leaving the Federation, but I really want her to, like, I really want Michael and Book to like go off and like have their own spinoff show and be like, you know, the rogues that are like figuring out what to do in this new world and save the fucking animals, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that this episode unfortunately kind of rushed some of this for me. Like, I get that Michael is going to stay with the Federation, and I feel like, you know, That was bound to happen. And I think it seems reasonable, right? If you're trying to give up something that you've spent your whole life on, like, it probably needs to take a couple of tries before you would like get out of it. So I don't disbelieve the narrative that she decided to stay and work with the Federation to figure out the burn and all of that. But like, I can't say I'm not like, I want more. Like, I want more time to pass with Michael really grappling with her role and who she's become and growing and changing and having a year, you know, in the future alone with Book, you know. Does that make sense?
I think it makes sense. I don't know. I'm maybe not as good at the storytelling aspect, obviously, as Charlie Jane is. But like, when I watched that, I did think also it was a little rushed. But I think this season in general, they're compressing a lot of things into a short, like, she was gone for a year, but then like is kind of right back in the thick of it kind of right away. It just, I don't know. Sometimes it seems like they're not like extending stories that could be 2-3 episode arcs. They're just trying to finish everything as, you know, within that episode as much as they could.
To be fair, it does feel very Star Trek to be like, we're going to have a good cry in front of a quorum and then the problem will be resolved.
Then it'll be okay. Yeah, that's true. That's really true.
I really wish we'd gotten to see more of that year where she was with Book. Like, I wish that they had just like had, obviously they had a whole episode of her and Book before the Discovery shows up, but I wish that we'd just gotten like, you know, maybe an extra episode of her and Book having adventures together, or, you know, gotten to see exactly what happened, because I come out from the opposite direction. Because I'm a Star Trek fan, and because I feel like Michael's ties to Starfleet and to the Federation are so important to her from like the first two seasons, I'm having a hard time quite believing that she's this conflicted about leaving the Starfleet or the Federation. And I mean, I sort of feel like it's obvious to me that she does belong on Discovery and that she does belong in Starfleet, because that's been her whole life. And, you know, her whole thing in season one was that she mutinied and lost her, you know, her position on a starship and had to kind of claw her way back and become an officer again. And it was this whole thing. And so I actually am not really understanding why it is that we're supposed to think that she doesn't belong in Starfleet anymore. Like, what's changed exactly? It's really unclear to me.
I think that I don't know if this is right. I don't know if what I think is right. Whatever. I'm here. We're just doing this on the fly. But, you know, Michael has always struggled with the boundaries of Starfleet, right? Mm-hmm. In all of the episodes, like you just said, and that's what made me think about this is like, yeah, she did mutiny. Like, she prioritizes her own moral compass over like following orders. Mm-hmm. And I think that most of the time her like ethics and morality are aligned with the values of Starfleet, but that doesn't necessarily play out in real time, right? Because it is a military structure and you are supposed to just like listen to your superiors under all circumstances. And Michael's like, oh, hell no, like that's not the right thing to do. And so I think that having a year away from this institution and like really seeing people in a different way, seeing that the world has changed, seeing that she can make a difference without the without this, like that she has her own compass and she can trust that. And it doesn't have to be institutionalized like that. And, you know, obviously I'm putting a lot on the fact that it was like a hand wavy. She spent a year away. We didn't see it. But like that's how I am interpreting it, or seeing the tension that she's having. Like she doesn't want to get stuck. They actually said this in one of the episodes, like Giorgio said something to the effect of like, she's had freedom now. Like she's been able to be outside of the chains of this very, like, very strict environment that she's never been out of before. And I think that that's exciting to her.
I think it's funny that both of you see the opposite kind of. I think that's really cool, because what I picked up was sort of, I haven't watched the episode multiple times, but I feel like maybe if I rewatched a few of this season again, you know, watch the season through again. I think they're walking that knife edge of trying to appeal to people that want to see both things without, you know, like they, you get this like free Michael for part of like occasionally, which is why maybe why she mutinies more or like leaves more, it's, you know, disobeys orders and goes AWOL or whatever you want to call it. Like maybe they're doing that more to appeal to the Anita fan and also doing more to appeal to like the Charlie Jane fan of like, let's make sure and hit these like Star Trek kind of big moments that we have been hitting for 50 years. I don't know. Interesting.
Yeah. So this episode has a lot of exposition-y stuff that they're just like, blah, 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 blah. Here's a lot of data about like the history of the Vulcans and scientific inquiry. And my brain just went, huh? Like I understood what was happening, but I did not grab the like minutia of it. But what I thought was interesting and is like, I think a lot of what's happening here is interesting, right? Both the fact that like Vulcan has turned into Navarre, and that the Romulans and the Vulcans who have been constantly, I don't know, at war, hating each other. I don't really know whatever the Romulans are doing in one moment to another. That like this vision that Spock has like dedicated his life to. Oh my God, the video of Spock talking. I don't know what it was. I was so emotional.
God, I miss him.
Yeah.
It wasn't just him though. Like towards the last half of this, like I was tearing up a bunch and going, what the fuck is wrong with me? Like, why am I getting so emotional about all of this? But it was just like, it hit me. But what I'm trying to get at, and there's like a lot of pieces of this that I hope we can pull apart, but is the Kuat Malat, they were introduced in Picard, right?
Yes, they were. Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was really interesting to bring them into this show and to like make them very much canon, and that like they bind themselves to lost causes. I really liked that in Picard. I thought we talked about the weird gender stuff that happened around there that was complicated in Picard, but in this show, like, you know, I kind of love that, like the Kuat Malat show up and they're like, yeah, this is not gonna happen, and we're here for you anyways.
Yeah,
I and then it's her too. Mother. What? Yeah. How do you feel about that? That I don't know how I feel about that yet.
Yeah, I mean, anytime I get to see Sonya Sohn like acting and being awesome, I'm excited because she's so great. And
so great.
You know, I loved her in the originals and I loved her in like everything. She's just got so much presence and she's so great at playing those kinds of roles. It felt a little out of left field that like the Romulan kind of truth cult arbiter person is her mom, and that's not like a conflict of interest somehow.
And like, when she had known her mom, like, wouldn't that be one of the first things she does is to like see where her mom's at?
I think she tried. She searched for her mom and she couldn't find her, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know.
I can buy that, I guess.
This is, I hate to make this comparison twice in the same podcast, but like this reeks of the like Skywalker Palpatine. It's only two families that really matter in this entire universe. Mm-hmm. Which yeah. I think Discovery is falling into that trap a little of like, well, you need, because we are absent creating characters that you're going to love for seven years, you know, like you would do with a Picard and all of the, like with all the characters on Next Generation, some of the characters in DS9 and in Voyager and in Enterprise, and like, you know, they create these characters kind of whole hog, and they're not doing that with Discovery as much. They're just relying on families that you already know and saying, oh no, but this person is connected to that, they're like, so that makes them more valuable to you immediately. And so I thought that was kind of a shortcut to make this interaction between the Kwat Malat representative, whoever they were, if it was just someone, How are they valuable? It had to be a connected person to this family
to break her down.
In order to be like, oh, well, this is now an emotional story as opposed to just a logical trial debate, which we haven't really seen in a modern Trek episode in a while. Like, that was very 90s TNG policy debate. is Data a person? Here, let me use these logical arguments.
Oh my God,
you know,
yeah.
Like those love were out an hour episode. Multiple times we got these like court episodes, the Q episodes, like all of these like trials. Smooth. And this
who doesn't
is sort
love
of
a trial episode?
I know. I was so excited.
Monsters.
Yeah, I actually felt the opposite, that, you know, my guess is that there was a version of this episode where the Kwat Malat person was just like a random Romulan who might have actually, you know, been able to challenge Michael from an outside perspective of like, look, I can tell you're holding something back. We're all about absolute candor. You have to like open up. And then they needed to bring back the mom somehow because the mom is like, you know, one of the few people that she has a personal connection to in this future. And so I think it felt like they kind of smushed two characters together and made it the mom. And it kind of muddled things up for me a little bit, actually, because I felt like it was kind of weird that it's the mom who's challenging her on her, you know, her emotional withholding or whatever.
Yeah, her mom who didn't raise her, that she didn't know about, that and her and her mom didn't even bond in season two, if I remember. Well,
they didn't get a
I barely
lot
remember
of
it.
Time.
They didn't really
yeah.
like, and then yeah, all of a sudden they're like, time. Trust each other. And like, I just, none of that made any sense to me. I was very confused about
it. Felt
it.
A little bit weird. And I didn't understand, to be honest. I mean, I mostly loved this episode, but I didn't understand why a trial of logic and science becomes a trial of like, you have to like expose your deepest inner turmoil and emotional stuff. It felt like a little bit of a left turn. I guess it's that they're now half Vulcan, half Romulan, and so the Vulcan half is we're going to debate the science, but the Romulan half is we're going to debate the emotion. I don't know.
Or the trustworthiness, I guess, is rooted in the emotion. What I found really irksome, you know what's funny, I'm like I love this episode, and the more we break it apart, the more I'm like, what the fuck was that?
Yeah, I know, same. But, like,
it's fine. It did what it needed to do, right? To like get us engaged. But I found it really troubling that Michael didn't spend any time thinking about like maybe the Navarre have very valid reasons for not trusting the Federation. Like she was advocating so hard for a Federation that she does not know, that she's not familiar with, that she's not even like in good standing with. And like wouldn't she like she is. Michael is like a scientist, and she is she really is about discovery. Like, I'm not trying to be like making a pun here. And so the fact that she wouldn't have spent her time researching and understanding why the Navarre have issues with the Federation, why they actually left, like you get a couple of lines between Saru and the president, but like barely enough to understand what's happening. And so that felt really disingenuous and very off character for me. I think we all got the sense that like they left the Federation for good reason. We're not totally sure why, or maybe not, but like that there's some political tension here that makes sense, or that I keep saying makes sense, but that like is justified in some way, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting at one point the president, whose name I can't remember, says to Saru, are you sure you can trust the Federation now? And he's like, oh, yeah. And she's like, well, you might want to. And like, I feel like they're leading to something. And I think Admiral Vance is going to turn out to not be as nice a guy as we think he is, perhaps. I don't know.
I think the same. I think this is set. It's all kind of, I think with that, if you look at it with a more kind of critical eye, you start to see, oh, they're setting up something perhaps for the like culmination of this season that the new Federation needs to go, like, or a new Federation needs to be formed and like old Federation just needs to die or something like that. Like that was the kind of little hints that I was picking up when I was watching it, is that like maybe I wanted Michael to say at the end of her little speech that like, it's not about this Federation. It's about what, about the mission of the Federation and what that is. It's not about the political organization of it. You know, it, you can get rid of the League of Nations and form the UN because the League had some problems. Like that's, I think, where they're going to probably go.
Yeah, I literally wrote in my notes, I honestly don't care about the Federation. Let it go and build something new.
Exactly.
Like that's it. Yes. That, and so they probably will go in that direction, but also like, I don't know. And I just, it just felt really weird that Michael didn't say, I don't know. I found it. I found like the actual content of it frustrating, even though I was here for like the Michael breakdown, you know, like the how I'm being forced to really confront my feelings. And, you know, I love that shit.
That's mm-hmm. Same.
I just hate that her confronting her feelings meant that she was choosing the Federation over Book, because that's bullshit.
I think Book will join the Federation.
No, do not speak that blasphemy.
I think he will. Because I don't know. Maybe because otherwise you have to create a separate storyline if you ever want to see him again, where she goes to like have adventures with him. I want to come back really quick to something you mentioned that made me think earlier. Why didn't she look into the Federation, or what if she was in this future for a year and spending all this time with someone not in the Federation? Why is it that she didn't learn more about the Federation? Because it seems like in all Star Trek, anytime you talk to a character not in the Federation, they're like, oh, Federation, huh? Here's how I feel about that. And it's like every time, everyone has an opinion on the Federation and what it is. And it's like, so somehow she lived in the future for a year and literally no one told her how, like, oh, well, the Federation did all these political crimes that, you know, nobody likes them anymore because they made all these like moral decisions that were terrible. You know, like nobody, not once at a bar somewhere in the universe.
Right?
Like nobody.
I mean, it's weird.
They
kind
of hand waved it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we're supposed to think that for that entire year, she only ran into people who were like, the Federation is gone. We don't know what happened to it after the burn. And like, you know, and like then finally, once she's with Discovery, they find the Federation in like two episodes. But and the Vulcans, the Navarians are like, oh yeah, the Federation, we know all about what happened with them. But
right.
And it's a little random that in that year, like basically, I think what we're supposed to think is that what she and Book spent that year on the other side of the galaxy, someplace far from Earth, and they didn't have the spore drive, so they couldn't get to Earth or Vulcan or, you know, Navarre.
Right, because of the burn.
And so they were stranded like on the other side of the galaxy until Discovery showed up. And then once Discovery showed up, they could just use the spore drive to immediately arrive at like the part of the galaxy around Earth, the Alpha Quadrant, I guess. And once they're in that part of the galaxy, suddenly like, oh, there's just, everybody knows this stuff that they didn't in this other part. I think that's like, that's my kind of fan kind of canon. Read. I don't know.
Head canon is, I think that sound for sure.
So one, I have a lot of skepticism around the like building up of a mystery in Star Trek and like, what is it going to be? Like Picard, like, you know, that was pretty disappointing in how that all resolved. And like, so, you know, what is the burn going to be? Whatever, we're going to probably find out at the end of the like the last episode.
Right.
There's only three more episodes left anyways.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, there's only three more episodes left. But so what I got confused by, and I may have lost it in the jumble exposition, but like they didn't know what caused the burn, but now we're being told that this SB-19 thing, which was the Navarre or the Vulcans, I don't know who they were at the time, we're trying to figure out an alternative to dilithium, and like we're forced then to continue doing this very dangerous work, which is now considered to be the reason that the burn happened. So like, was that all just like hidden away in the like secrets of the Federation? And so now everyone just assumes that they didn't know what the burn was, but the Federation actually did? Because like, Yeah. My short question is, we didn't know what the burn was, but now we're finding out that like all these people actually knew what the burn was, but now we don't know what the burn is because Michael, as the one individual, just like Stamets, that can do the one thing that nobody else could possibly do in the world, mm-hmm. is going to solve this problem. Like, I'm confused.
And why did no one solve this problem over the last whatever amount of time it's been? Because that's not clear to me. Yeah, like literally no one was like, yeah, we should probably figure this out. Yeah. Mm. No, yeah. We'll just go around and run. We'll just run around the universe, you know, without warp now. Just because, you know, whatever. It doesn't matter.
It was super weird that, like, after all these conversations that we've had about the burn, including conversations with Admiral Beardy Pants, you know, and the rest
he's
of the Starfleet
though.
People.
He's
yeah,
so
I like
hot.
Him.
I like him. I think he's real cute.
It's weird that after all these conversations about the burn, we suddenly find out that the Vulcan/Romulan, the Navarians, have an explanation for the burn that they've decided is true and that nobody mentioned this before. And I guess it's supposed to be classified, like it's supposed to be like nobody even talks about it because it's so politically sensitive. And like, I feel like politically sensitive is like a phrase that I heard a lot in this last episode. By the way, I just wanted to offer a correction. There's actually 13 episodes of this season. So we're at the halfway point.
Oh, shut up. I haven't planned for those.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, no, there's 13 episodes. It's going to air until January.
Well, thank you for checking in on that for me.
No problem.
Okay, interesting.
We I think do this. I you know, I talked to Anita about these even not on the podcast about episodes like this. But I want to just say definitively my favorite part of episode 7 was the whole Saru Tilly stuff that we've been talking about where he offers her the first officer position and she has. And this is something I've made in my notes of episode 6. Tilly is a person with imposter syndrome every episode. And I am here for her, like, kind of being able to say, to being told that she is worthy. Like, I would have loved if she could have figured it out herself. But that's, as somebody with imposter syndrome who does science communication as a non-scientist, it's like so endearing to me when she walked into engineering and everybody was like, say yes. Like, that was amazing.
And,
then when Michael
came in and was like,
did I miss the cool say yes bit? I was like, that's so nice.
That was super cute.
Yeah.
I really loved it. And then she was like, why should I say yes, though? She didn't just say, like, in a lesser show, they would have been like, say yes. And then she'd be like, okay. And instead she was like, but why? Because, like, I still have my doubts about myself. And they had to reassure. I don't know. It was nice. It felt good for me.
Yeah, I love Tilly, and I love the fact that she and Saru are getting to have this, like, better relationship this season. I love, like, every time those two have a scene together, it just feels really, like, kind of sweet and kind of Star Trek-y because they've got this kind of, like, they're both, like, very invested in being good officers, and, like, Saru is becoming a mentor to Tilly, and Tilly is able to give Saru kind of, like, the straight dope or whatever on whatever's going on. And, you know, I think that, you know, it felt a little... Like, for her, for an ensign with, like, very little experience to become the second in command is legitimately weird, and I expected at least one of those people in the Say Yes scene to be like, fuck no, it should be me. I've been sitting on the bridge for, like, you know, I was an officer on all these other ships before Discovery, and, like, I've got all this experience, and I did the command program 3 times, and why the hell is this woman getting... But I loved that everybody wants to see Tilly succeed, and I am super... invested in Tilly's, like, her progress and her kind of ascension. And I really love the Tilly-Michael relationship. I really wish that those two would have more scenes together this season. Yeah. I think it's hilarious that they're still roommates, and I had kind of forgotten that they're still roommates. And it's like, well, even though they've both been first officer of this ship now, and, like, usually officers get their own fancy quarters and, like, you know, get to hang some really weird inexplicable art on their walls in every other Star Trek.
With the shiny blankets. That was so shiny.
And, like, or if
guys,
they're...
that was, like, hundreds of years ago. That's fallen out of favor.
If they're Riker, they get to have their trombone sitting around or whatever. But, you know, I think it's hilarious that, like, the first officer still has to share quarters with, like, this other random person. But, you know, I guess they just like being roommates. I don't know. I'm here for Tilly getting to become, like... getting to be recognized for how awesome she is, because she always is. Like, she's always just, like, so freaking smart and so on top of things. And like, she's just got such a good heart, but she's also really level-headed, which I think is a really interesting combination in a character. And she's kind of grown from just being like the awkward, like nerd girl who mm-hmm. is just always awkward to being like something more complex and interesting, which I'm very excited about. I wanted to go back really quickly to like
Can I say a Tilly thing and then we can go back to your
sure.
part? Okay. I just want to say that Tilly actually says, are you asking because I'm qualified or because I'm compliant?
Yeah.
Which I thought was really, really lovely.
That was also great.
So like aware of herself.
Yeah.
It was really awesome.
Absolutely. And then also at the end when everyone says like, yes, say yes, like we'd follow you anywhere. I think there's something really interesting about the fact that like what you're saying, Charlie Jane, is that like there's all these people who are way more qualified. Why would she be in this role? I love that it's like that they're pushing against the boundaries of tradition here, right? Mm-hmm. That they're like, this is a new unprecedented time and we're going to choose the most qualified person on a much wider range of choices and like emotional resonance and, you know, engagement and care with like the staff or the crew it might be more important right now than like, yes, you passed the tests or whatever. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
That's it. That's just what I wanted to say about Tilly.
No, that's awesome. I just wanted to go back quickly to like Navarre and basically like, you know, as someone who always wanted to see kind of something come out of that whole thing where Spock was trying to reunify the Vulcans and the Romulans, which was, you know, one of the more interesting kind of ideas that TNG kind of dropped in there and then just kind of swept under the rug for like pretty much the rest of Star Trek since then. Like, I don't think it's been mentioned really, even in Picard, where there's so much stuff about Romulan politics. It's then nobody ever says, oh, but we're still trying to reunify the Vulcans and the Romulans. And, you know, yeah. They made that movie Star Trek Nemesis. I think it was the one where you have like a lot of Romulan politics and like Tom Hardy is Picard's like evil clone who's in charge of the Romulans. And it's like a whole freaking thing. And yeah. Nobody ever talks about reunification in that either. So for them to come back to that and be like, yes, Spock's dream was finally realized. I got super emotional about that. Like mm-hmm. I actually felt like, okay, this is like, A, it's really cool that Spock had this lasting impact, and B, it's just really cool that, like, finally, this thing that basically since the very start of the original Star Trek, this idea that the Vulcans and the Romulans are one people who have been divided, we're finally doing something about that, like, after, like, 1,000 years. That just, yeah. I really loved that.
Yeah, same. I felt like it validated a lot of things that Spock was doing in these weird, like, you know, like, in these one-off kind of times you see Spock in the outside of the, you know, original series, obviously, like late in the movies and in a little bit in 2009 and a little bit in like, you know, the Kelvin timeline even. It just was nice. It was so nice. Like yeah. Anita said with the video, I got really emotional seeing him and like watching these characters who we've come to associate with Trek, watching a character from old Trek and being like, these people are doing the same thing on some level, even if they're going about it in a different way, which was cool.
Yeah, and just like watching Michael be like, I didn't want to see what happened to Spock, and like watching her like have so much pride in it, right? Yeah. And it like, turning out to be like quote unquote good news in some ways. Like, could you imagine going into the future and like everyone you know is dead, and like looking up what's happened to them in their life? Like, it just that mm-hmm. would be so overwhelming.
Yeah.
That would be so overwhelming.
It would be.
All right. Okay. So before we give our final ratings, I just want to remind folks that today is Giving Tuesday, and we could really use your help to keep bringing feminist media criticism to the airwaves and to support our ongoing work to end abuse in the games industry. You can learn more and give us some money to help us do all of that at feministfrequency.com/donate. All right. So let's do some ratings. So you can rate them as a totality, you can rate them as separate episodes, and you can rate them on whatever scale you want. How is that for no boundaries?
Wow, I like it.
I often do dilithium crystals.
I was going to do dilithium crystals.
Yeah, it's a good rating system. You know, I think it's a good one. So, but you feel free to
actually, you know what? I'm going to give both episodes like 900 lesbian mushrooms out of 900. Because I enjoyed them. Mm-hmm. The lesbian mushrooms were more last season, but you know, whatever.
Still, yeah. you know, they're still aroundish. I love that they on the first season of Star Trek, we had a actual like woman who got her degree in like mycelial sciences. It was like, this is some garbage. Like, this makes zero sense whatsoever. It was delightful. You can go back and listen to that. Okay, Trace, what do you think?
On the scale of all the ships exploding in the burn, that B-roll that they keep using of all the ships exploding, I would say episode 6 had 80% of those ships exploded. And so it was pretty cool to look at, but, you know, kind of a mess. And then episode 7, all the ships exploded for me, I would say. It was really good.
So the ships exploding is a good thing.
Yeah, like a full burn.
Full burn.
Not medium burn. This is sounding weirdly like, I don't know. It's, yeah, anyway.
Okay, I'm going burn. To, my rating system is not going to make any sense. Okay, so Dissembler is the name of... If your character is going to be like ruthlessly interrogated in the T'Kall in Ket, the Dissembler, you become a Dissembler, I think, if you like, if your character is assassinated in some ways or you prove yourselves to not be worthy. So I'm going to rate mine based on like 1 out of 5 Dissemblers, with 1 being good and 5 being bad. How's that for flipping things around?
Whoa.
I know this makes no sense. I just wanted to use the word dissembler. All right. So I'm going to give episode 6 a 3, and I'm going to give episode 7 a like 1.5.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, I really liked it. Like, I know that we kind of ripped it apart, which is, you know, what we do and useful, but I just like, I felt very positive about the show while watching it, and I'm just going to go with that feeling.
100%.
Yeah, I just love this show in general. I think it's like, you
it's
know.
It's getting so much better. And Michael is so much better and delightful, and they figured out her hair, and she has so much more freedom to, like, act.
Ugh. Yes. Oh, I was going to ask, do you think we're going to see a Robo-Picard in this future? Because technically he could have lived this long. Do you think they're setting up another secret reveal that we will see him? Because, like, if you think about it, let's say this is what I've been thinking about. I wrote all these notes down because I was, like, rewatching these episodes. And I was like, okay, so we dismantle the Federation because the Federation had something to do with the burn, or some element of the Federation did. And then the Federation has this moral, we can morally say, destroy the Federation. We can all agree with you. You guys did bad things. Then Picard shows up and he's like, what's up? Let's build a new thing. I know all about the old thing. Let's build a new thing. It's like he becomes a new Spocky type character. I don't know. This is something that obviously I have no idea. I'm making it up, but it'd be fun to see him.
I mean, I just doubt that they could get Patrick Stewart. I think Patrick Stewart is probably at this point, like, you know, I think he'll do Picard because it's his show, but I'd be surprised. Like, I think they'd have to throw a lot of money at Patrick Stewart to get him to do like an extra Star Trek thing. That's just my guess.
He's not, you know, the youngest dude anymore. I feel like it's got to be pretty exhausting to do a show like this.
Yeah.
But maybe they'll just CGI it.
Maybe it'll just be, like, well, after 900 years, Picard is now just like a sphere. He's just like
he lives in a potato.
He's just like a floating like ball of energy, and they can just get Patrick Stewart to be the voice of this ball of energy. Yes, perfect. It is I, Picard.
It is I. The Picard.
Oh, you know what we also didn't talk about was that the sphere like appeared once when Saru was talking to the computer in his office or whatever, his place that he sleeps. But like, it's never been brought up again. So is whatever. Who cares? Anyways.
There are things to say still. There's still things to say.
Yeah, well, apparently I have many more episodes to fill that I have to figure out, so whoopsie.
Yeah, I mean, basically Discovery is just like the most special ship in the universe because it has the spore drive nobody else has. Its computer is this super advanced secret computer thing that like knows everything. And it's just like, it's even so far in the future that it should be an obsolete, you know.
Yeah.
Wreck. Yeah, it's like, but it's like it's the thing most that's special, save everybody.
Perfect ship that has all this amazing special stuff.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay, so if folks want to learn more about you, Charlie Jane, and all the things that you do, where might they go do that?
I'm Charlie Jane on Twitter, and I have a newsletter at happydancing.substack.com.
Sweet. And Trace, where might people find out about you?
I am Trace Dominguez on Twitter, DOMINGUEZ. And I'm also that on Insta and my YouTube channel. And you can find me on PBS Stargazers, which airs at night usually.
Like on TV. It's like old school.
On actual TV. Or you can find it on your local PBS station.
Sweet. We will link all of that in the show notes so folks can have access to that easily. And that's it for this week. So thank you so much, both of you, for joining us. It was delightful. Join us in 2 weeks when I'll be joined by Ali Matu and Bobak Ferdowsi to talk about episodes 8 and 9. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.